You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Frankie Barnhill, filling in for Gemma Gaudette. Idaho has passed another grim milestone in the COVID-19 pandemic. The state is now reporting more than 100,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19. And with the surge in cases comes an uptick in deaths associated with the virus. There are now more than 1,100 families mourning the loss of a loved one. Republican Governor Brad Little told the public in a press conference last week that in some counties, quote, the morgues are full and they are starting to ask for refrigerated trailers to hold bodies. Our healthcare workers are spread thin and struggling at times to keep up. So on Friday, the Idaho Board of Health and Welfare authorized a new rule which sets up standards for how Idaho healthcare workers may soon have to ration care, in essence, deciding which patients get treated first and who will be last to get treated, if at all. Idaho Statesman reporter Audrey Dutton has been reporting on this and joins us now to tell us more. Hi, Audrey.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, very grim and dire and serious topic, so thanks for being here. So take us back first. Who wrote these standards? Have they existed before the pandemic, or are these were these created wholesale new during this COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, they are new. And the impetus for creating them was Director Jeppesen talked about when he held a media availability about this. The impetus was going back to around Hurricane Katrina when patients had to be triaged. You had healthcare systems being overwhelmed. So states around the country have been drafting crisis standards of care for their healthcare systems to follow in the event that they don't have enough resources to care for the people who need their help. So Idaho did not have their crisis standards of care written before the pandemic started. There was a committee that was put together to do that, very large committee, medical folks and stakeholders. And so they drafted that, I believe, during the summer. And there's a lot of guides. There's one main guide that's about 45 or 48 pages long, and then there are some accompanying materials too.
Okay, so we'll dig into the specifics of that in just a minute. But before we get there, you know, in the article that you wrote that we'll link to on our website, you talk about, you know, the hospitals being fully overwhelmed and what that would look like, and then that would trigger these crisis standards of care. You know, of course, we know at different points this fall, different hospitalization rates have gone up and down. You know, some hospitals have had to divert patients for, you know, a night, for example, and then things calmed down a little bit. You know, one case, there was a case in Twin Falls where they had to turn some folks in Nevada away, I believe. So it's kind of a moving target as far as, you know, when people are saying, well, hospital's full or we're at capacity. What exactly would it mean to get to this point of being fully overwhelmed? What kind of metrics are the standards based on?
So for Idaho right now, the most likely scenario would be there's nowhere left for patients to be accepted or transferred. So if you walk into the emergency room at your local hospital, they'll generally be able to take you. If they can't, they can find a bed for you at another hospital. Usually in Idaho, sometimes in other states. So the worst case scenario is our hospitals are no longer able to take more patients and they can't find another place for them. And what hospital is at capacity means really depends. And so so that when we're talking about resources, there are a few different categories, like staffing. If you don't have enough nurses, if you have nurses out sick or on quarantine, if they have sick family members they're caring for at home, then it cuts down on the number of staff you have for your beds.
Right.
So that's one resource that could be put into crisis standards. Could also have oxygen if for some reason Idaho hospitals can't get enough oxygen supply. You could have physical space or ventilators, you know, equipment, those sorts of things. So, but what we're hearing from hospital leaders is that it's the staffing being limited at a time when more patients need care. That's what we're looking at right here.
Right. So when people say, oh, the beds are full or our beds full, or what does that mean? Sure, it could physically be the physical space, as you said, but in large part, it's about the people who are actually taking care of those folks in a hospital
right.
bed.
Right. And it's the type of patients who need the care.
Right.
So COVID-19 patients typically are pretty complex. They need to be isolated. So there's, you know, a hospital in North Central Idaho that I talked with, and they are technically licensed for 25 beds. So they technically have 25 beds when they're fully staffed and everything's running as it should be. But a lot of those beds are doubled up in a room. So if you've got a COVID patient and you've got an influenza patient and the other patients are trauma or having babies or something like that, you just lost two rooms. or two beds rather, because there can only be one patient there. So in that case, it was something like they actually only have 12 beds if they can only use one bed per room. So when we see the metrics of beds, that does not tell the whole story. Different hospitals are different. ICU capacity is probably one of the best metrics to use, but even that goes up and down and really varies by hospital. So,
right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the actual prioritization and the categories that were voted on and approved on Friday. You know, who will be first to receive treatment and who will be last to be prioritized?
Most likely to be helped by the medical care will be first. Least likely will be last. So if you've got someone who is, they're actively dying or they are believed to be certain to die, they would be given most likely comfort care, so medication or something like that. And then if there are ties, the guidelines lay out certain tiebreakers, and those include first priority children. This was for ventilators specifically, first priority children. And then you've got pregnant women with viable pregnancies, and then you've got certain age groups. And after that, you've got, if the person is part of the critical healthcare infrastructure, they may get priority. So, and the reason for putting these together is, can you imagine being a physician or a nurse having to make a decision about this?
Absolutely not.
Or a hospital.
Oh my gosh.
And having to do it immediately. You know?
Right.
So this is intended partly to give some sort of scoring system, objective measure that they can use. Hopefully it will never have to be implemented.
Right. And let's talk about age specifically. I mean, it's true that the priority goes to younger folks, generally speaking, correct?
I don't know that that's the case. So for a tiebreaker, maybe, but if you had, as I understand it, if you had a younger person who was very likely to die, and you had an older person who was in very good health and had a really good prognosis, then the older person might get priority.
Okay. So there is definitely a lot of nuance within these, which is why there's all these documents that folks can research and read about if they'd like to learn a little bit more. I wonder who will make the decision to move to crisis standards of care in the state? How will that work?
The director of the Department of Health and Welfare will ultimately be the one who activates it. But it's laid out in the guidelines. All, you know, the steps that would need to be taken. And so the hospitals are going to be communicating with the department, and you'll have various stakeholders all across the state. It's something that we will probably, it'll probably be telegraphed to us far before, because we'll know that the hospitals are starting to fill up. You know, in Utah, we saw the Hospital Association warning that crisis standards may need to be implemented there. So they were communicating about it beforehand.
Okay. Has Idaho ever had to do this before? Thinking, you know, back to maybe a natural disaster or to the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. Has anything like this ever had to happen?
Not in recent memory, at least. The folks that I've talked with don't remember this ever happening. We did talk with Dr. David Pate, and he's a member of the coronavirus working group, advising the governor. And he was a CEO at a hospital in Houston when something like this happened. They had a catastrophic natural disaster that basically took out two of the hospitals in the region, large ones, and his was the last one. And they filled up. So he had to cut off new admissions. And he recounted having to talk with the families, and they were crying and pleading, please take my patients. And they weren't able to.
Yeah. Dr. Pate is, of course, also a regular contributor to our Wednesday Doctor Roundtable. He'll be on this Wednesday as well. And yeah, his story about that experience was really harrowing and does speak to, as you mentioned before, having to make these decisions. I mean, even when you have the standards, I can only imagine the mental health toll that this would take on our healthcare providers. And I know you've done some reporting on mental health around healthcare workers. You know, how are they coping with this, you know, facing this possibility?
Not well. I mean, the past year has been, almost a year now, has been really, really difficult for all the healthcare workers I've talked with in hospitals and nursing homes, home health agencies, assisted living, in clinics. I mean, everyone has been feeling pressure this entire time and stress, and some of them have gotten sick themselves. I've had some nursing sources decide that they can't work in these jobs anymore. And we know that's happening all around the country. Some folks are, you know, looking at retirement, and that's been an issue all along. Is we have a lot of retiring people in our nursing workforce. But, you know, ultimately, this time is just incomprehensible for some of our healthcare workers. And if we get to crisis standards of care, we need to worry about, you know, what it's going to do to our healthcare workforce.
Right.
Because this is not something that they ever thought that they would have to do.
Well, let's talk timeline. When realistically could this happen? And what, if anything, can be done to keep it from happening at this point?
It depends who you ask. So I've heard anywhere from a week to 10 days to January 1st. And we talked with one medical provider, Ted Epperly, who's on the Central District Health Board, who said, you know, I think it's, he said, essentially, I think it's inevitable at this point. I don't see a way that we're not going to have this happen, but we can mitigate it. And then others have said, you know, Dr. Pate has said, we still have an opportunity to keep this from happening. Everybody at this point has heard what they need to do to keep that from happening.
Masks, in addition, social distance, right?
Yep. Social distance, masking, hygiene, don't have gatherings. Christmas is coming up, New Year's is coming up, and that's a concern for healthcare right now.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Audrey, for sharing your reporting. It's definitely a very sobering time in Idaho right now. We will link to Audrey's story on our website. Her reporting, of course, can be found at the Idaho Statesman. Thanks so much, Audrey.
Thank you.
Up next, a struggling Treasure Valley arts venue gets a boost from the community. I'm Frankie Barnhill. You're listening to Idaho Matters.